Hello, friends. We're going to continue now with Rays and Initiations webinar commentary number 55. We've been discussing some very interesting things about the initiation process governs the dual life of the disciple in three ways, and we've been seeing there's expression on the physical plane. There is also the elevation of consciousness involving the increasing fusion of the soul and personality using the medium of the Antikarana, and then, interestingly, something called here the heart of God and the heart of the Son. It is revealed both through the spiritual triad and the soul-infused personality as they unitedly prove the livingness, that's the first three word, of the divine love nature. So the heart of God seems to be the heart of the planetary logos found in an etheric sense on the etheric levels of the cosmic physical plane, the heart of, and then also perhaps on the cosmic mental plane, if the heart of the Sun is found on the cosmic mental plane, and also on the monadic level of the cosmic ethers. There's also something called the subjective Sun, and it may have something to do with the cosmic astral reflection of the heart of the Sun. But the livingness of the divine love nature is something that has to be demonstrated in the lower worlds and also on the higher levels as well. And it brings this relationship between the heart of God and the heart of the Sun. They are mysteriously related. I'm not exactly sure how. Very interesting. And it's through this sustained relation that it becomes possible for the human beings to enter into the hierarchy, which is found on the cosmic ethers at this time and not on the in the dense physical body of the planetary logos or solar logos. In other words, not on the lower 18 subplanes, not on the lower 21 subplanes. And eventually, this relationship, again, how do we know how? I don't know yet how we know how. Allows the ongoing monad to pass off the cosmic physical plane onto the cosmic astral plane, and we might say that happens, you know, on the way of higher evolution. On the way of higher evolution. So somehow, we might say that somehow the heart of God and the heart of the Sun are both related to the way of higher evolution, lying a long way ahead of us, of course, but still we have to have the idea of the distant goal if we are to prepare properly, and maybe since many initiates of the fifth degree are required these days and in the future, there will be an increasing rapidity of progress, opportunity for those who truly concentrate upon the esoteric goal as Master DK has presented it. The elevated stature of the human mind is now making this possible. So we go on to number 55, beginning on page 536. Each divine aspect has three subsidiary aspects, you know, the nine total in this way. And we might say, if you look at this, the threefold monad, the threefold triad, the threefold soul, the threefold personality. But the aspects are the first aspect and the monad, and you might consider the spiritual triad a combination of the first and second. The second aspect, the soul, three subsidiary aspects, according to the first, second, and third ray, and then the personality, the lower mind, the astral nature, and the etheric nature. The physical nature is simply an aggregation of substance which has not yet been reconditioned in terms of the necessities of the second solar system. So each divine aspect has three subsidiary aspects, and in our planet and on the cosmic physical plane, the lowest aspect of love, which we call the will to good, is revealed. Oh, that's something that I think is really interesting. I oftentimes put the will to good as the second aspect of the first ray category of will, but this is really important. And I don't recall, it's one of those things that, you know, you may or may not recall seeing. I don't recall seeing it, at least I don't remember it. The lowest aspect of love, which we call the will to good. And I just want to say, remember this. This is not a valid number. Okay, I don't need a valid number, perhaps. Okay, so let's say, remember this. Love and the will to good. You know, we've been told that the higher aspect of goodwill is the will to good, and we've been told that goodwill is love in action. All of these are related. Let's just say within this general love category, within this general love category, goodwill is the third aspect. And we might say love is the second aspect, and the will to good is the first aspect. But they're all within that second category of love. For humanity struggling upon this cosmic physical plane, you know, we human beings, if we tread the path of Earth's service, we have to fight our way off that path onto the path of the Soto Logo. It seems a great possibility and a great reward. One wonders how that is done, but certainly all the paths eventually lead off the cosmic physical plane, even if there is a returning possibility, or a possibility of return. For humanity struggling upon this cosmic physical plane, we subdivide unconsciously this willed good into three aspects. Unconsciously. Okay, let's see how he does it. In other words, I've taken a big category around the word love, and I've shown that there are three divisions, but now maybe each one of them can be divided. These we are only beginning to grasp as existent possibilities. The lowest aspect we call goodwill. All right, well, he's going to maybe do it in a different way, little realizing the attitude to the universal goal which it sets. You know, let's just say goodwill or GW. I think, you know, let's get a GW in there, don't you think? Goodwill is so utterly practical and utterly important, very practical and important. The second aspect we vaguely call love, and hope to demonstrate that we do demonstrate love through our affiliation with the hierarchy, and I suppose the way we treat our fellow human beings. Well, he's saying the same thing I did, and you know, you never know whether cryptomnesia, is that what they call it, is involved. You know, you read it, you don't know where you read it, and you think it's your own idea. Anyway, the highest we call the will to good and leave it undefined because it is in no way possible, even for initiates of the fifth initiation, truly to comprehend what is the nature and purpose of the will to good, which conditions divine activity. Okay, the highest, so he's basically saying, or we are saying the same thing here, but he is saying something relatively new to me. I have sometimes tried to define, let's go. 1, 2. Okay. Why is this not working? Okay. I'm having a little difficulty here getting my cursor to, well, maybe this will help. We'll, conditions divine activity, I'll put that in. This is not responding. So maybe I have to, I'll try to get this back. Of course, I managed. It was a little complicated. But the real thing, of course, is to be involved with this second aspect of divinity in our many dealings with human beings and with the planet and in our inner life where we try to deal with the higher reaches of our nature all together. So to practice love in action, which is goodwill, to develop that presented attribute from the techniques of fusion that the Christ presented and which we call love. And finally, this will to good. What have I thought about it? I have thought that the will to good is the will to realize the archetypes, and there I must do this, if you don't mind, or if you do, archetypes. The archetypes to realize the archetypes of the world of being within the world of becoming. So somehow the good lies in the divine purpose conceived by any great hierarch and like Sanat Kumara, and we have to make sure that these archetypes do manifest. And through the will to good, we can make sure. We bring these archetypes into expression. Well, that's how I have thought of it, and hopefully, okay. Now this is auto-saved, so I'm going to have to somehow really use this. I'll say, really, really use this, and maybe I'll get as far as three reallys. I do love the autosave because it, I had 6 minutes of work in there, and I would have lost that. Transcribers, you don't have to transcribe such things as this, obviously. The emphasis in the earlier teaching was upon the character as the determining factor, whether man could take initiation, as it was called. And this was another of the presentations which have greatly misled aspirants. One must prepare assiduously for initiation and not just, show up. All right, English UK, no. English Finnish. Not just show up, so to speak, and have initiation delivered to you as you, quote, take it. Character is of major importance. And I think some of us, that have been around for a long time, we sometimes forget how important it really is. Just like, vegetarianism is rather assumed, not that there's a big struggle about it, but some who have been around for a while, they just think they can eat anything with impunity, When you've achieved something, you have to hold on to it, and it becomes part of your habit nature, and not something to say, well, I'm done with that, so I can do everything I used to do. Character is of major importance. Of such recognized importance that it is not necessary to dwell upon it. Well, he's saying, you know, D.K. is saying to us, surely, you know, he's saying that. It is character, however, which enables a man to become a disciple with the aim in view of eventually entering, eventually, you know, let's just say, and we know it well, not every disciple is immediately entering the ashram. No, certainly not. It can take some lives before that is possible. You know, given the fact that there could be 20, 30 lives, it's hard to say, between the first and second initiation, and given the fact that one generally does not become an accepted disciple until at least midway between the first and second initiation, it can take a long time, once one is a disciple, to enter the ashram, because an accepted disciple is accepted by the master and does then, in a way, enter the ashram, or at least more probably stand upon its periphery. So with the aim in view of eventually entering the ashram of a master and passing through the processes of initiation. And of course, one has to be at least an initiate of the first degree before the other initiations are possible. It is character which is rightly regarded as the first requirement when a man steps off the probationary path onto the path of discipleship, and on the path of probation, it is character which is constantly tested, and even on the path of discipleship, lest we lapse, lest we fall backward into former ways, which is always possible. The Master Hilarion, I think in his book, Light on the Path, talked about great beings not going ahead, but falling back, or failing tests. And maybe our own planetary logos failed a test on the moon chain. Excuse me. But he is still, however, a long way from his goal, a long way from being accepted by a master as a disciple. So, you know, a number of lives will pass before there is real acceptance. I'm sure we do all kinds of very foolish and stupid things on the way, which makes it impossible for the master to bring about between himself and us a closer affiliation and with the ashram, as it would upset the balance of the ashram. The ashram, or any group that is functioning well, always has to make some adjustments when a new member is brought in. And we don't think of that, being the new member, how people have to adjust to us. When I think back about how I went to the Arcane School, you know, after some years of work there, and in 1980 I joined the headquarters after maybe 8 years of work in the Arcane School, it wasn't on my mind how much people had to adjust to my way of doing things, but now that I think back, they did. Sadder but wiser, and a little humbled by seeing, in retrospect, the truth as it was. The truth might be expressed this way. When a disciple's eyes are removed from himself and his functioning in the three worlds is becoming spiritually controlled, or is in the process of being controlled from the levels of the soul-infused, soul infusion, S-L-I-F, I hope. Nope. Soul-infused mind. Okay. Well, soul-infused, we have to have that, don't we? Goodness. S-L-I-F. S-L-I-F-D. We've got it. Okay. soul-infused mind, then he is faced with becoming a truly mental being. And maybe this means, you know, regardless of the rays. I mean, you know, if you're on the 2-4-6 line, perhaps you become a little less of the purely or truly mental being than if you're on the 3-5 line, let us say. But anyway, we will have the focus of the life upon the mental level, regardless of what the rays are, if one is a true disciple. With the focus of his life upon the mental level, where it is subject to soul control. And, you know, DK emphasized the mind is much closer to the soul than is the astral body, you know. Because he told us about, you know, people who have the devotional approach and, you know, maybe the religious type of individual, they're a bit farther from the soul than those who can use the mind and hold it steady in the light. It then becomes, it then in turn becomes the directing agent of the man upon the physical plane. But let's remember, this is the soul IFD, soul infused mind, and not just the selfish mind. This does not mean that he is occupied with making his lower concrete mind active, directing and illumined. You know, some of these are words, by the way, that relate to the third degree, interestingly enough, the word direction, the word illumination. That is taking place gradually and automatically under the pressure of the higher influences pouring into and through him. The soul-infusing process will take care of equipping the mind to be active, directing, and illumined. He is occupied with the task of becoming aware of the activities of his higher or abstract mind. Well, certainly DK's teaching helps us with that, doesn't it? DK's teaching certainly stimulates the abstract mind. Uh-huh. Well, I'm so used to those being already in place, but they're not. But we will get them in place. Abstract mind. Okay. And of the pure reason which controls and animates the Buddhic plane, and which is itself susceptible to impression from the monad. So this is his task. The task is greater than just dealing with the concrete mind. The task is far greater than just dealing with the concrete mind. He is occupied with the task of becoming aware of the activities of his higher or abstract mind. There is a difference. The higher mind is all three of the subplanes of the higher mental plane, and the abstract mind is found upon the very highest subplane, and is in a way included in the higher mind. Okay. And then beyond that, he's becoming aware, when those intuitive flashes begin, of the pure reason which controls and animates the Buddhic plane. It's just a knowing how things really are and how things really exist in relationship without having to laboriously reason about it, which can lead to erroneous conclusions. It's just a direct knowledge and intuitive knowing. And of the pure reason which controls and animates the Buddhic plane and which is susceptible to impression from the monads. Let's write that down. The pure reason is susceptible to impression from the monad. And remember the numbers here. The monad is the second, found upon the second subplane of the cosmic physical plane, which is in resonance with the Buddhic level of pure reason, which is found upon the fourth. The two and four are very much there, and the human monad in the fourth grade of hierarchy is expressing itself on the fourth subplane. So monad and pure reason are very closely together, but whereas the pure reason reveals right relations between all things, the monad reveals the oneness of all things. At least that's how I have represented it to myself. That plane has to become the one towards which his mental consciousness looks and upon which it focuses attention. So the man, well, the disciple, has to become intuitive and seek straight knowledge, as Master M has called it, and begin to develop the, and this is what it's called, transcendental mind. I like very much the way Buddhi is included in mind, and it shows the higher potentials of Mercury. Okay. Astrology is interwoven into all this. You know, it is the occult language, and DK did say that his astrology book was the most strictly occult book that he had written, because it dealt entirely with energy. So if I weave these things in a bit, you know, you can learn the subject, and it takes more than one life to really learn astrology. I haven't learned it yet, and I'm on my way, and we all can be on our way. There it must be polarized in the same sense as the consciousness of average humanity is today polarized on the plane of the emotions and of astral activity, but is shifting with rapidity onto the mental plane. So the master, whose consciousness is polarized in Buddhi, is shifting to full polarization in Atma. Sometimes you think it just goes this way, you know, that the fourth degree initiate is entirely polarized in Buddhi, and the fifth degree initiate entirely polarized in Atma. But when you read about where the masters really do function, you see that it doesn't just necessarily rise plane by plane by plane. It does rise, but the full mastery of those planes is not yet not yet present. You know, somewhere in Cosmic Fire, somewhere he talks about the six-pointed star and the seven-pointed star and the five-pointed star, and how one turns into another, and how they descend upon the high initiate. And he works on planes that are slightly lower than the ones he is just achieving. If the master is just achieving the consciousness, the real consciousness of Atma, he much more successfully works on the plane of Buddhi and gradually achieves the consciousness of Atma. And so it is with us when we get into the concrete mind, when we get into the abstract mind, then our real work may lie in levels of the mind below that, but fed from the abstract mind. And when we get into the intuition as we're developing it, our real work may lie on the level of abstract mind, where we can function more easily, but we are developing the buddhi, the intuition. Everything is gradual, and we ascend step by step by step. And if we think we can jump over the steps, it just proves our gullibility to glamorous thoughts. DK says, if it seems like someone is making very, very rapid progress suddenly, it means it's been well prepared in the past. It's not something that is being encountered for the first time. So what is it here now? Plane of the emotions, but moving on to the mental plane. Okay. This involves a dual activity. I suppose this moving into intuition and this moving from astrality into mentality and from mentality into intuition. It involves a dual activity. The lower mind becomes a potent factor in directing the service activities of the disciple. And why would that be? We might say because the lower mind is LM. How about that? I think I should do that one. Okay. The lower mind is no longer a selfish desire directed, or lower desire, lower desire directed mind. These activities become a major motivating potency in the disciples' lives. We want to ascend the planes, and are a consequence of the growing soul infusion of the personality, which surely stimulates the aspiration. Thus, developing and unfolding his sense of inclusiveness, we might say this: the higher the plane upon which or within which we polarize our consciousness, the greater the inclusiveness. Now, you know, something about my love of, let's see, within which we polarize our, who you are, I want to say this. Whoop, that won't do. The grammar and the glamour. And I'm going to call this within which. Okay. All right, now where are we? Have I lost myself? No. Maybe I should. Inclusiveness is the supreme key to the understanding of consciousness. Oh, my. When I see something like that, you know, all the flashing goes off, and I say, here is a marvelous statement, which is true for us, at least on our planet and our solar system, probably in our universe. Inclusiveness is the supreme key to the understanding of consciousness. Wow. Why is that? Well, that's what consciousness attempts to do, you know. Consciousness attempts to be ever more inclusive, more capacious, you know, wider, rejecting none otherwise. That which is rejected will not be understood. Inclusiveness is the supreme key to the understanding of consciousness, and I imagine that the intuitive inclusiveness is greater than the inclusiveness of the abstract mind, which is still a little bit external, and the inclusiveness of the monadic awareness sees all things as one. But as we onward move in life, that seeing all things as one can only deepen, and in mysterious ways. You know, you can't just arrive and you see all things as one. That's it. No, as we onward move in life, first of all, we include a lot more things and we see them all as one. At the same time, the higher mind is impressing the lower mind. And we might say here, via the first aspect of the Antichronic, bridge, and there's an adjective I don't even know whether it exists, but we'll pretend it does. Antichronic, okay, by the Antichronic bridge, and drawing it into a higher fusion with itself. So all these centers are interrelated. All these centers are interrelated, and the higher among them provides for the elevation of the lower centers. So the abstract mind is providing for the elevation of the concrete mind, and intuition the elevation of the abstract mind. I'm sure Einstein was a good example of that, and and somehow the spiritual will and Atma providing for even greater capacities of pure reason and intuition, and on it goes. From the point above, we can always offer something for the elevation of the point below. And when you have an individual who stands above, then he or she is in a position to offer the possibility of elevation to the ones below. This process of unfoldment creates certain major points of successive fusions. Successive meaning they go in some kind of sequence, and, you know, with fusion comes power. With integration comes power. And I guess INTG, integration, comes power. Because there's no possibility then of the different parts working against each other. And when there's no waste of energy through friction, then there's greater power in the whole. With the consequent points of tension, the fusion, every new fusion gives you a new point of tension, and perhaps the fusion, well, I'll do it this way. Every new fusion gives a new point of tension, and from a necessary point of tension, a new fusion can be engineered. Okay, these points of tension, when consciously attained, become the actuating energy which enables the disciple to, quote, stand in the light, and in that light see greater light. Within that greater light he knows and sees, grasps and absorbs that which has hitherto been dark and secret and unknown. This is initiation. Well, how wonderful. And it's the kind of thing for me, you know, did I read it? Have I ever read it? I guess so, you know, and probably more than once, but have I really read it the way I should? Has it really made the impression upon me that it should? And the answer is no, it hasn't. And maybe now it can. Stand in the light, and in that light see greater light. Within the greater light, he knows and sees, grasps and absorbs that which has hitherto been dark and secret and unknown. This is initiation. So we must learn to stand in the light, stand in a sufficient light to reveal a still greater light. In that light we shall see light. So light is used to reveal light, which becomes, reveals a still greater light. You know, and I would, if I had the means in terms of my fonts, I could go on and on. But every light is more intense, but we have to, light is a platform used to reveal still greater light, etc. Well, you can see that in the new schools of occultism, the opportunity will exist to study deeply, to fertilize each other's minds, and to move into practical esoteric capacity, so that we can revolve upon the pedestal of light and face the other way, face towards the dark. And then the seven points of light within us transmit the outward streaming light, and lo, the face of those upon the darkened path receives that light. For them the way is not so dark. So every acquisition is to be used for the elevation of those who have not yet attained the acquisition we have just attained. And when we get that solidly in our mind and really turn it into a practical action, then we will rapidly be becoming the true initiate. We can't do it in any selfish way, hoping that the portal of initiation is for individual us alone. Periods of search, periods of pain, periods of detachment, periods of revelation, producing points of fusion, points of tension, and points of energy projection. This is the story of the path of initiation. So glad that Master DK is giving this to us as kind of a preamble for the studies that we're going to be getting into here. You know, we're only halfway through the second part of the book, and it, you know, it gets deeper as it goes. So I'm sure we can all relate to these things, and we just have to go through them. Search, you know, seek and you shall find. Periods of pain, pay in full. Karma demands it. Detachment, as we learn what we really are and are not. Periods of revelation, that flash of what was not seen before. Producing fusion with what was not seen before and what is habitually seen. Points of fusion, points of attention by means of which we sustain the fusion and become more radiant and thus project energy. Such is the story of the path of initiation. And I assume that anybody who's bothering to read this book cares about treading the path of initiation rather than just kind of meandering along and letting the general destined elevation of humanity in the mass take them to where they need to be. Maybe enough of us are tired of not knowing, so that we're willing to take things into our own hands. Initiation is in truth the name given to the revelation or new vision, whichever draws the disciple onto greater light. It is the in truth a name given to the revelation, a new vision. You know, you walk into a new room and you see something new. And a new revelation comes. And that revelation will draw you onward towards still greater revelation. The new revelation and the new vision draw us ever onwards into greater revelation and greater, not visualization, but vision. It is not something conferred upon him or given to him, you know, it has to be earned, and then for the sake of the whole, powers are added to those he has achieved, and those he has achieved are stabilized. Well, you know, I'm sure we have some experience with this because we know what it's like to develop capacities, skills, and then to reach a point where they are stabilized, not just we're learning them. But I saw the other night when I was with my friend Harold, we just went YouTube surfing, and we looked up some of the great pianists, and we looked up Vladimir Horowitz. Sometimes I think he's the reincarnation of Franz Liszt, you know. Has huge, huge hands. And you just cannot believe what he can do on the piano, what he did. You just cannot. It's almost superhuman. And it wasn't just that he was attempting to do it hit or miss. You know, he might have known whether hit or miss. But it became stabilized so that when he performed, there it was to the ear of most discerning musicians and appreciators, there it was always, stabilized. This amazing feat of virtuosity, stabilized. Well, we're We're all ascending, and we're going to be stabilizing those things which look to other people almost superhuman, and one day they will be. But, you know, having a sense of proportion, as we somewhat do, we will realize that compared with other attainments, they may be superhuman, but they're not super duper, you know, they're not the top of the tree. And thus we ascend. At first we enter, we practice, we achieve, we hit or miss, sometimes well, sometimes not so well. We stabilize the good, and then we move on to something higher. It is a process of light recognition and light utilization in order to come into ever clearer light. Aren't these wonderful definitions of initiation? I just think, boy, we've hit a section of the book here where, you know, it's this has been given to us in gold, you might say. Statements are being made which carry deep truth. The revelation or new vision, whichever draws the disciple onward into greater light. And we see the new vision in the light we have. And in that light, we shall see light. If we intensify the light we have, it always breaks through into a new light where new things are seen. It is a process of light recognition. We might even say recognition of new vibration, because light is vibration. So is sound. So is color. So it's a vibratory recognition in a way, and I'm going to kind of put that down as an idea, a vibratory recognition, V-I-B-Y, V-I-B-Y. Oh, I've got it already. See, that's it's already there. Okay. And I suppose VIB should be vibration. And it is. Oh, goodness. Well, I'm ahead of myself. Progress from a dimly lighted area in the divine manifestation into one of supernal glory is the story of the path of evolution. It's beautiful. And, you know, in the old commentary, so often we're standing in a darkened room with all the limitations of that darkened room, but eventually we do something and we move out of that darkened room, or the walls fall down, or the light comes in. Always there's the possibility of greater revelation, light. And when it comes, we say, my goodness, it was always there. It's the revelation of that which always is. And yet we did not know it was always there because we did not have the necessary sensitivity or the necessary point of tension to break into the recognition of that which was always there. In the Master's archives, there are some rules for disciples of very ancient origin. Goodness, how old? Among them is one that is so old and so abstruse that it is only possible, now possible, to bring it to the attention of humanity. You know, it's almost as if the oldest revelations, or what are they? Rules. The oldest rules have to wait until much later times to be revealed. There's kind of a symmetry there. Only now is it possible to bring it to the attention of humanity, owing to the increased mental and spiritual perception of the modern aspirant. Spiritual, you know, instinct of the first degree, intuitive instinct of the third. It can be inadequately translated as follows. You do kind of wonder what Master DK can read. A light is seen. No. Is that it? Yeah. The light is seen, a tiny point of piercing light. This light is warm and red. It nearer draws as it reveals the things that are, the things which may be. It pierces the third center and removes all glamour and desire for maybe lesser things. And we are counting from below. So the solar plexus center is the center indicated, at least it seems so to me. And the redness of it indicates that the solar plexus is involved, and we have to learn how to get rid of the desire for the lower things which hold us in the lower three worlds. Now maybe we're going to see another light. A light is seen through the medium of the lower light, a light of warmth and heat. What's the first one? Warm and red. Now the next one is warmth and heat. It pierces to the heart, and in that light all forms are seen and pervaded by glowing light. You see how we are ascending through the centers? So here the heart center, no. Heart center, AT, gotta have that, HTC, and we better, HTC, my capital H is hierarchy, so it's not gonna let me get away with this. Heart center, I'll use the American way of writing center. Here the heart center is indicated, and this center reveals light pervasion. It pierces to the heart, and in that light, heart light, all forms are seen as pervaded by a glowing light. It pierces to that light, let's just call it heart light, but my bracket must be there. In that light, which is heart, why can I not get this? There, okay. Hopefully, now I've got it. Heart light. All forms are seen as pervaded by a glowing light. The world of lighted forms is now perceived, linked each to each by light. Do we perceive this? Do we imagine it? You know, this is a high stage. This light is blue and flaming in its nature. And this blueness, this suggests the second ray, and maybe Venus, Jupiter. There's a blueness to Jupiter. There's a blueness to Venus in its higher brackets and flaming in its nature. Between the warm and reddish light and this clear light, there burns a glow of flame, a flame which must be entered ere the light of blue is entered and is used, a kind of a burning ground, is that beginning? No. So I'll just say BG. Kind of burning ground has to be entered. BG. And so we're ascending through various kinds of lights and their revelations. Warm and reddish is the first. And the clear light, you know, the clear light reminds one of the clear, cold light of Bodhi. It may be that, but certainly there is something cold and clear that reminds us of the Bodhi. And DK has asked, well, is Bodhi yellow? Is Bodhi blue? Is Bodhi violet? And it depends on the being in relation to which the Buddhic plane is being positioned or described. Okay, ere the light of blue is entered and is used. Have we entered the light of blue? In our meditation, in our pre-full moon meditations, we kind of go into the indigo sun, right? The shortening golden path above which we hover, we enter the indigo sun. So we enter that light, at least imaginatively. But here we see that DK is really reserving the clear cold light for the next paragraph. So it's not yet the clear cold light. The clear cold light of Bodhi, or maybe not, maybe more the light of mind. Okay, and with light of mind, L-O-M, and I'll put that in there. Light of mind, and I will also add to this, the CCL, which is the clear cold light. We're going to need it. Cold light. Okay, another light. Another light is then perceived. The clear cold light, which is not light, but darkness in its purest purity. I want to ask, even on the Buddhic plane? Well, maybe. The light of God himself. Well, it seems to go higher than Buddhi, but it's clear and cold, and the clear cold light, at least, clear cold light begins with Buddhi, but seems to rise higher. It renders dark all else beside itself. Shambolic light. All forms fade out. Well, all we have to do is go to Rule 9, and we see that. Hiding all difference, blotting out all form. And yet the whole of life is there. So this suggests the monadic and the logoic planes. It is not light as we know light, and that's so important. It is that pure essential essence of that light which reveals itself through light. Oh, this is so, so wonderful. You know, how DK has translated this for us. And, you know, this is the, from the old commentary, this is the very essence of, in that light we shall see light. So here is the very essence of the statement, all those Finnish characters, right? Scandinavian characters. In that light we shall see light. And this shows us the ancient section of the old commentary from which that idea comes. And it was the second light to which the Buddha and the Christ both referred when they said, I am the light of the world. This is the light of the heart light, pure reason light, clear cold light, second light. It has some elements of Buddha in it, I think, you know, if both the Christ and the Buddha used it. But, it, you know, they were secondary souls, regardless of what their monadic ray might be. And so that's how they worked. I am the light of the world, they said. It is the light of God himself, the Lord of worlds. Lord of the worlds. By worlds here, we mean different chains, different planets, different chains, and different globes, in which the lives within the council chamber of Shambhala live and move and have their being. Whoa. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to stop here, and I'm going to say end of Raised and Initiation Webinar Commentary, number 55. This is still the 31st of January, and we have gone up to what page? 539, it appears. And I think we started on 536. I believe that was the case. It'd be nice to find it without doing too extensive a search. Yeah, we did. So 536 up to 539, making our way slowly but surely through this, scratching the surface, yes, but at least forcing ourselves to think of these things. When it's so easy, when things are difficult, like this book is difficult, like the secret doctrine is difficult, like a treatise on cosmic fire is difficult, so easy to just not read them, or just put them on the shelf and maybe hopefully one day they fall off and hit you and you read them, you know, or use them to open doors. That means door stoppers. We don't want that either. So these are pages 536 to 539. And we'll say the beginning, BGN, of Raised and Initiation Webinar Commentary, where we start next, number 56. Not sure what day we'll do that. Maybe later tonight. I don't know. And we'll see how far it goes. These are marvelous things, friends, that we are reading. Marvelous things. And we have to force ourselves to go slowly but surely, carefully, allowing the impression of the words to make, to sink deeply into our consciousness. Who knows what will come up, you know, as we're building the link to the soul, as we're building the Antikarana. Ideas will come from the realm of Mercury, and they will maybe fertilize our consciousness and help us see more inclusively than ever we have before. I, you know, personally, there are days when I really, really deeply enjoy doing this. You know, I have other duties, guess we all do, of a more mundane nature, and I oftentimes wish I want to get back to thinking about what Master DK has said, thinking with you together about what he has said, and when I can, and when I'm not too sleepy or too dull, and hopefully ideas flow, then it becomes a great joy to think with him about what he has been trying to convey to us. Okay, so that'll be it for the moment, and we will pick up when we can. All the best, and let us keep pondering on this. See you soon. Bye-bye.